Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
I feel bad for him in a way because, you know, he told me he's sorry about it. He did tell me finally that he was sorry about it. But knowing that they, you know, they argued and knowing that some of the stuff that went on, I'm like, I know she wasn't perfect. I know she had faults, but nobody deserves this.
If Janice brings up Kelly to the kids, then he cuts them off from the kids, and the only way that she's able to see them is supervised visits. And he says the reason is because she's talking about Kelly, and he don't want her talking about Kelly to the kids. I found that kind of odd because the kids were home, and he kind of keeps them from talking about her.
He sent the kids home with his parents, who they barely knew, and left them in New York for months while he went back to Japan. Now, I don't know if it's accurate, but I'm told that there's footage, pictures, and so forth, witnesses of him having big parties and enjoying himself during that time frame. Well, my niece is traumatized because she woke up and her mommy was gone. So the last thing I would think he would do is leave her in New York.
On the evening of October 26, 2011, 27-year-old Kelly Cribbs Abad tucked her children into bed. Her husband was at church meeting with their pastor, and according to him, when he returned home, he couldn't find any trace of Kelly and her car was gone. In the nearly 8 years that have passed since that night, Kelly has never been seen or heard from again. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 196 of The Vanished, Kelly Cribbs Abad's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices and audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. When Kelly's case landed on my desk, I found it to be a challenging one to cover because Kelly was living in Japan with her husband, who was stationed there with the Air Force. What happens when someone goes missing from an Air Force base in another country? Who is tasked with investigating? I found that there wasn't very much information about Kelly available online beyond a few articles. We were fortunate enough to speak with Kelly's mom, Janice, about what she remembers of Kelly growing up.
She had an outgoing personality. I don't want to say she never met a stranger, but she was outgoing. She would talk to people, and she would try to help people. And when she was younger, here living on the farm, she was raised on the farm in a rural area. Her grandma would often go and help with some disabled relatives, and she would go with her, and they would play games with this individual and take them riding and stuff like this. And, you know, she had a tender spot for people that were challenged. If she could help somebody and they needed something, she would often try to give them a hand. And she did seem to relate well to older people, probably because she was raised around her grandma. You know, grandma often took her with her to senior citizen dinners and meals and to visit her friends, her grandma's friends. So she was more comfortable around older folks and younger folks. She had, it was harder for her to relate to people her age at those particular times in her life.
We also spoke to Kelly's sister, Lisa, who described what her sister was like.
Just willing to be helpful, and even to a stranger, just really quick to try to believe in the best of people. She was tiny, but she didn't seem to know that how fragile she was. She's like 115 pounds. That just made her personality all the sweeter, though, you know. She took care of the kids by herself for months and months at a time alone. And then oftentimes, you know, when they're in these places where they are, you don't have your family nowhere nearby. You have to make fast friends, and she was really good at that and really good at just taking the helm with the two little kids all by herself. And she came from a really small town with no red light to this day. There's no red light there. So she amazed me that she was able to go into a marriage like that and be in, I believe it was three different countries in a small amount of time. They lived there in Okinawa for like 4 years. Kelly's my half-sister, but she's 14 years younger, and she's my only sister, and we have four brothers besides, so nothing's supposed to happen to the baby. She had a really good charismatic personality because, you know, like I said, being in different places and all and moving around as much as she did, she was able to adapt and all. That when our mom went and was looking for her, people where she had shopped near the base would hug my mom and cry, because they remembered my sister being so sweet, and they remembered her. You know, when the kids grew out of clothes, she'd either share them or she'd try to trade them off for the next thing needed. So she even had them ready for Halloween weeks before Halloween and had their pictures made. And she was looking forward to the next transfer, which was coming in the mail within days. And it was either going to be Germany, which she was really excited about, or somewhere in the north midwest part of the United States where it was going to be a little bit colder, but she was preparing that, you know, getting her mind wrapped around that. She talked about Christmas. She was just really, she's really a good Air Force mom and wife. And even when her little girl, they were doing an interview for the little girl to be at the, like a preschool, she asked the teacher if she could, she said, "May I touch this?" And so she, Kelly raised the kids that she wanted other people to like them. Our grandma used to say, raise your children so that other people will like them. And that was a part of advice that I believe Kelly took everywhere that she went. She realized, I don't want people to dread to see my kids coming. I want them to embrace my children. I want my children to treat people the way they want to be treated and so forth, you know.
Kelly had met her husband Vince when he was stationed near her home in Georgia. The couple married in 2006 and moved around to different Air Force bases before their big move to Japan. Kelly's mom Janice told us that she did have some severe health complications during her pregnancies that made things difficult being so far away from family. But overall, she enjoyed the military life that she had with her husband and two young children. Here's Janice on what Kelly was doing around the time of her disappearance.
I think she was tired of Okinawa, and she was ready to go somewhere else. I think she wasn't hollering about it, but she was ready that morning even. She had said, we're going to be going somewhere else because his 3 years was going to be up. And she said that he had put in for his next duty assignment, and she was excited to see if it was going to be, I think she said, Germany or Alaska, I think. Anyway, she was excited. She struggled during the pregnancy. She had trouble with both of them with extreme nausea, and she had to have a lot of support with that. You know, with the first one, she had to have, she was at Edwards, and so she had home health care with that, with the PICC line and what they call TPN, total parental nutritions that they gave, which had all the nutrition built into it. So that helped her get through that. And so with the first one, she finally got through that. And then with the second one, she was in in Okinawa, which the home health care wasn't available. She went through the same extreme nausea and stuff again. But they did, you know, they did pretty well.
On the October night that Kelly disappeared, we don't know much about what transpired, but we can piece together what happened from what Kelly's mom, Janice, was able to share.
Well, she called us for us. It was 13 hours time difference, or maybe 14, because we'd already been, I think, you know, it was the fall. So our time change, I think, had already worked into that. So we talked to her on Tuesday night here, which was already Wednesday morning there. Okay. So we didn't know anything was going on.
Nothing seemed amiss, so Janice wasn't worried until the next morning when Kelly's husband, Vince, called her.
So that was Thursday morning before I found out. And he just called on the phone, you know, and they noticed when I got up, there was a bunch of phone calls. And so he just said, well, you know, have you talked to her? And I said, no. And then he said, well, she didn't come home last night. And, you know, she's done it to me again. And this. I said, well, have you checked her neighbors, these two girls that I knew that she had talked about? And I don't know what he said about that. I think he might have finally said he was going to. And I said, well, you know, I just talked to her the other night and she had already taken Kyrie to school and she had Benny and she was going to the Hawk to work for volunteer work. She was going to her doctor's appointment and then she was going to pick up Kyrie again, go back home and then get him down for a little bit and get up and go to Master Club at church. Anyway, we just talked a little bit. He just kept talking about the computer was open, this. That was it. And so I didn't hear anything again until I tried to talk to him again. I tried to call him on Skype, and I didn't ever get him.
During her call with Vince, Janice told him that he had to report her missing to the authorities. At this point, Janice knew that something bad had happened, but she felt helpless from the other side of the world, and she knew that this wasn't her daughter's normal behavior.
She always called me if they had an argument. Even if it was 3 o'clock in the morning, she would call me. I am just totally upset that, and I tried with the phone company to get records here. Well, they said, well, they couldn't give them to me, but if the Air Force or another entity with the law enforcement would request them, they could still get them. Well, so I didn't have that. So I do not know. I don't understand if she was having a problem of that magnitude, that she would have called me and told me something was going down. I think it would have had to have been pretty big for her to have left the kids alone. I've never known her to do such a thing. She wouldn't let them go outside by herself. She was very protective of them. That doesn't mean she was perfect, but she was there with them most of the time by herself, or either unless they were at daycare or they were with the babysitter. If she left them, there must have been some kind of threat, something major going down causing that. So I can only think that something major was happening. That's one thing. Number two, I don't really think that's what's happened. I think there was an abduction of some kind, and whether it was an abduction of somebody she knew, they did say, I looked in the records again, they said her phone pinged a tower in Chabana, and Chabana is right at the apartments are right there, not far from the church. This was after she supposedly had left. The lady that lived, their houses connected, and she told me when I went with my friend, we went and talked to this lady, and her kids played with Kyrie's, with Kelly's daughter, that night that Kelly supposedly just got in her car and drove off. This is what I was telling you. Supposedly, she just got in the car. She put the kids to bed, got in the car, and drove off. She said that night that there was loud voices, doors slamming, and she didn't look out the window. Or she could think that was, I hope they don't wake up my kids, because she just put her kids down. And I said, well, that's kind of strange. And she said, well, I try to mind my own business. And it seemed kind of strange to me that all that would have been going on if Kelly just quietly went out and put her kids to bed, said, well, I don't want them waking up, went out and got in the car and drove off.
The timeline that they've been able to piece together for October 26, 2011, is that Kelly picked her daughter up from school and then went home before leaving for church around 7 p.m. Kelly's husband was also at church that evening, but he had not arrived at church with Kelly and the kids. Kelly left church with her children and got home around 8:45 p.m. Her car was seen entering the base at 8:37 p.m. that night. This is when it's believed that Kelly put her kids to bed. Kelly's car was seen leaving the base at 9:11 p.m., but it's unclear if she was the one driving. It's around this time that Kelly's phone powered down for the last time. Her husband stayed at church longer than Kelly to speak with the pastor. He said that he and Kelly had argued that day, and he wanted to talk to the pastor about it. When he returned home around 10 p.m., he found that Kelly was gone. A few days after Kelly vanished, her car was found in a rocky area near cliffs at Cape Zampa. Janice doesn't believe that the car was there for the 3 days that Kelly had been missing. A search of the vehicle yielded Kelly's purse, phone, wedding ring, and identification. There was also a note that said, "Love my kids, love my hubby and parents, bye." Vince told their pastor and Kelly's family that she had wanted to harm herself, but her friends and family have a hard time believing that. They also have a hard time believing that Kelly would leave behind her 4-year-old daughter and 22-month-old son all alone in the house at night. While researching this case, we found a reporter from Stars and Stripes, Matt Burke, who has covered her case extensively from early on. He sent us some disturbing police documents from Vince's first marriage. According to those documents, in 2001, Vince and his first wife became involved in a physical altercation, and Vince removed the only phone in the home from the wall, preventing his wife from calling emergency services. After Vince left, she locked the door, but Vince kicked it in, after she refused to let him back in. When we spoke to Matt Burke for this story, he shared what he's learned about Kelly in reporting on her case all of these years.
So my name is Matt Burke. I'm the Okinawa reporter for Stars and Stripes, the military newspaper over here. And we just basically report on the military around the world. I was on mainland Japan for a few years, and then they moved me down here. And I was aware of this case even before I came down to Okinawa, because when I was on the mainland, you know, I would read all the stories about it and stuff like that. So the previous Okinawa reporter, his name's Travis Tritton. And while he's basically reporting on that down here in Okinawa, I'm on the mainland and we kept in touch. So I'm reading about it. And then when he left to go, I think he took a job in DC. He basically said to Janice, you know, like, hey, this is the new guy. If you have any questions, you know, you can email him, work with him. You know, we just started talking about it and it was a mystery. So, you know, I was interested in trying to find out what happened. So I just started looking into it. Basically, Kelly was seen driving off base one night. She had been fighting with her husband. You know, she disappeared after that. You know, there was a lot of suspicion surrounding him, as, you know, there always is. When a spouse disappears, they automatically look, you know, to the husband. In this case, basically, I think they searched on the island. They ended up finding her car 3 days later in this place that, you know, has high cliffs. And, you know, it seemed kind of like a tidy, I guess, you know, suicide type story. And I think, you know, that was the narrative people were pushing. But, you know, there was a apparent suicide note that was found in the car. I guess, you know, they had been having problems in their marriage. Apparently there was some infidelity as well. Kelly disappeared and you know, years have gone by and nobody's been able to locate her.
When We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. While the military may not have put forth much effort into looking for Kelly, there were others who did want to find her. We were initially asked to cover this story by a man named Jeff, an 18-year Marine Corps veteran, who didn't know Kelly personally, but heard about her disappearance when the military stationed him in Okinawa, Japan. Kelly's story intrigued him, so he set about to find the answers no one before him had attempted. Here's Jeff.
I got stationed in Okinawa in May of 2012. My boss at the time told me about the story while he was showing me around Okinawa, and I started looking into it and reading about it. I was just intrigued that, you know, she hadn't been found and there wasn't a whole lot of people searching for her. I was just intrigued by the story, so I started digging into it a little deeper. They said that her and her husband had went to church. Kelly had came back before him. They had had an argument. Vance, the husband, stayed back and was talking to the pastor. When Vance got home, she was gone. He reported her missing the next morning. I was told around 8 or 9 a.m., but just the next morning is all I know for sure. I know whenever the police looked into it, the OSI, which is the Office of Special Investigations in the Air Force, they said that her vehicle was seen leaving the base around 10 p.m. At some point, I went and talked to OSI with a Japanese detective that's a friend of mine that was working the case. He got me an interview with OSI, and they said that, well, you know, her car was seen leaving the base. And I said, yes, but those cameras didn't show who was driving that vehicle, did they? And they looked at me and they said, well, how do you know that? And I said, because I've been in the Marine Corps for 18 years. The cameras didn't show who was driving it. So you don't know that she was driving that vehicle whenever it left. Now, they didn't confirm or deny anything at that point, but I could tell by their mannerisms that I had stumped them. Like, they didn't know what to think about that. The other thing was they found her vehicle 3 days later out at Cape Zampa, which is about a 15 to 20 minute drive from Kadena Air Base. They said that they told me that they found her shoes out there and they suspect that she jumped. And I asked the investigator, I said, have you ever been out to Zampa? And they told me that they had. I said, you tell me that you walked to the edge of the cliff and jumped barefoot out there. Because the rocks are so jagged, you don't walk around barefoot out there, even in the daytime. I've been out there. I spent a lot of time out at Sampa. Because your shoes will find out there, you know, in my opinion, they were planted. But one thing that I know is that a human being, unless they're on some type of dope or something, doesn't walk on those rocks out there. It'd be like walking on razor blades.
With the likelihood of suicide diminishing quickly in Jeff's mind, he decided to look at what was going on at the time Kelly disappeared.
They had orders to go to another duty station, and they were preparing for that. It was going to be colder. They were, from everything that I've done, I don't see her the mindset for suicide. They were preparing for new orders. There was some marital issues, but other than that, they were preparing for the move. I mean, they were having marital issues. That's the only thing. There was one other thing, and this isn't really significant, except I talked to one of his ex-fiancées. She had charged him with assault and then pulled the charges. And I think it was in Arizona, but I can't remember. Large number of people suspect that either the husband did something to her or had it done to her. The island's not that big, but there's a lot of uninhabited areas too out here. The majority of people think he did something to her. The Japanese police are, like I said, I'm friends with detectives and police out here. I hang out with them once a month, and they won't go on the record. I guess they're not allowed to go on the record, but they've told me that they think the husband did something. And I asked my friend, I said, why do you think that? And he said the husband was cold. He wasn't concerned that she was missing. He was seen partying a few days later.
Around the same time that Jeff was looking into Kelly's disappearance, so was reporter Matt Burke. He wanted to know if there were any cameras along the route that Kelly or whoever was driving her car would have taken.
We found out that there were no cameras there at the time because we basically traced the route that she supposedly took if she had gone to Zampa. You know, we traced the route and we contacted like every business, the villagers in that area, you know, along the way till it got to Zampa. And we actually found some cameras, but they weren't there when this took place. And the whole theory that she drove there that night and committed suicide, I mean, I'm pretty sure you probably read what we had gotten from the police. But basically, you know, we poked holes in that. I don't believe that she went there that night. You know, there are multiple witnesses that say her car wasn't there the day before the police found it. So the narrative that the Air Force was, you know, trying to push right away was she was seen leaving base at this time headed towards Zampa. And I think this was after the car was found. So they were trying to connect those two dots. But, you know, there were multiple witnesses that said on the 28th that the car was not there. And so that means that the authorities from the base find it at 4 a.m. on, I think it was the 29th, and it wasn't there the day before. So, you know, it basically, there's 3 days where this car is unaccounted for, where the Air Force is saying, well, she drove in that direction. That's where she went. And, you know, it doesn't look like that's what happened. So the rest, I guess, is a mystery. I'm not really sure. You know, I don't think they were trying to cover anything up or anything like that. I think they probably just, there's no evidence of anything, and they just, it's easier to say, okay, she drove in that direction. We see her driving in that direction. The car is found 3 days later. There's a suicide note in there.
We were able to get in touch with one of those witnesses that Matt Burke had told us about. Her name is Bernice, and she shared what she remembers about the car on the cliff.
Well, my husband and I were stationed here in 2011. We actually were out. I am into photography, so I had taken a night photography class. And so I had wanted to go out at night out to Zampa and take some photos of the statue out there that I just think is really cool. I thought it'd be cool to take some pictures of. And so we had gone out there well, Kelly's car was found, I think it was like 4 a.m.-ish, right around that time frame, on a Saturday morning. And we were there Friday night. When we left, it was around, I can't remember, it was right around between 10 and 11. Whenever we go out there, we go in and we go out the same way. And so we drove through the entire parking lot on our way out, and her car was not there. And, you know, she'd been missing for 3 days, and she just was gone. And then all of a sudden, her car is found there just a few hours after we'd been there, and it had not been there then. So I had called the OSI and left a message saying that, you know, I had some information, but I didn't hear back from them. So I called back and I had left a message. And then when I didn't hear back from them, I thought, oh, okay, well, they must have, I didn't know how it had resolved. I didn't know that she hadn't been found. And so I just thought, oh, okay, well, they must not need to talk to me. We got transferred back to the States, and I missed Okinawa, and so I had gotten on some of the guy lived on Okinawa Facebook pages and a couple of others. And then Janice posted asking if anybody, you know, knew anything. And I was like, well, wait a minute. You know, I thought this case had been solved. And so I messaged Janice and started talking with her. And then we came back. We came back here in 2015. I got back here and I went and I talked to the OSI and gave them a statement. I haven't been able to get a copy of my statement. They told me that I would have to fill out a FOIA request, which I think is really weird. It's my statement. Why can't I have a copy of my own statement that I gave to them? You know, it's like, that just doesn't make sense to me. And the person that I talked to, he had been here then. He was brand new to the island. And he had actually worked on that case. And so he and I spoke. I told him my opinion. Well, there's, you know, when you go into an investigation, they're supposed to not have an opinion, just be unbiased and everything. And he wasn't. He really went into thinking that Vince had done it. But they could not find any proof. They couldn't find any evidence. And that's just really frustrating me.
The suicide note is one of the strange aspects of this case. Not only was it found in the abandoned car on the cliff, but no writing utensil was found in the car, and it doesn't appear to be in Kelly's handwriting. Also, there's not really anything that indicates that she was going to harm herself. It said, "Love my kids, love my hubby and parents, bye." It seems like a bizarrely worded note. I found it odd from the beginning of this case that Kelly had complete strangers who cared enough to look for her, but not her own husband. It's true that everyone grieves differently, and Vince had young children to take care of as a single father. But some of his actions after her disappearance are undeniably weird. Here's Jeff again.
As far as taking interviews from, was it Dateline? He didn't want to talk about it. He said that he came home and the kids were there by themselves and Kelly was gone. He was interviewed, I believe it was by Stars and Stripes. And I believe his words were, maybe she chose her own way to go or something like that. Something to that effect. I know there's in a news article, I think it was by Stars and Stripes, where they quoted him. Like he was basically offering up that she killed herself.
At one point during the investigation, someone told Jeff that they had found skeletal remains in a shallow grave. The person reported this information to authorities, but they chose not to investigate.
One of the searches that I did was out at Cape Hedo, which is the northern tip of Okinawa. He's an Air Force active duty guy. He found skeletal remains out there. He was out there at Cape Hedo. On the rocks and the slope. He said that he found a shallow grave, skeletal remains out there. He said that he reported it to security forces and they told him that people find bodies all the time, or skeletal remains all the time on Okinawa because it was a war zone, but there was no in the history of Okinawa, there wasn't fighting up at the northern tip down there. It was more, anyway, there wasn't a lot of fighting out there. So I asked Jordan if he'd, what he was going to do. He said he was going back out there to search. And I said, well, I can't go out there during that day. Would you make a video and I'll go out there at a later date? So he did. He went out there and tried to find it again because I told him that the Japanese detectives will come investigate, but I've got to find that skeleton and they'll come out, but they won't come out and help me look. And Jordan couldn't find it. And I looked at the video and I went back out there. I've been out there three times. I can't find it. So I've asked NCIS and I've asked OSI if they'll go out there with a cadaver dog or something and help look. And I haven't gotten much help on that.
One of the aspects of this case that I find discomforting is that it appears that the government hasn't made much of an effort to find a U.S. citizen missing abroad. This bothers Jeff, too.
It seems like to me that if you have an American missing on foreign soil, that more people will get involved. Even the FBI, I think the FBI should have been involved. I know that they, you know, used to have a unit that when Americans, something happened to American overseas, they would go investigate, and they just haven't done anything with Kelly. And I don't understand why. It doesn't make any sense to me. It's definitely not like the TV, you know, people make it out on TV, like, hey, if you go missing and they're going to come look for you, it's just not there. But if I'm poking and prodding like I have been with Dateline, with the tip lines and everything else, you know, you would think they would at least look into it. It's frustrating for me because she's a mother and she's an American and they haven't found a body. To my knowledge, if someone with some resources, someone with a badge with resources would go out there, we could find what Jordan found probably pretty quick, probably in a day. Get 10 or 15 young people and some dogs and stuff, and then you could probably find it. And then we could put at least the skeletal remains that Jordan said he found, we could put that to bed, you know. It wouldn't take too much time, probably a day's worth of work.
Kelly's sister Lisa hasn't been to Japan, but we asked her what she knows of the search efforts for Kelly.
Well, I got suspicion that she had had an argument with him and hadn't come home. I guess my stepdad and mom had alerted me. If you hear from her, let us know, blah, blah, blah. So then the husband, and I thought it was Kelly. So when I answered the phone, I said, Kelly, because I want to make sure, you know, she's back home. They made up, whatever, if that had happened, if she had a little tiff with him or whatever. So he's just telling me she didn't come home. That's how I officially knew. Well, the cliffs, I understand from my mom telling me, as well as other people that live there, the cliffs you could not really climb with toe ring flip-flops. And there's only a couple of places on that cape that you could hurl yourself far enough over to hit water. Most likely you're going to hit rock. And there was no clothing ever found. And he kept harping that she was in the water. So it makes me think if he did have something to do with it, he knew for sure she wasn't in that water. And then when the vehicle was found just a few days later, he mentioned they drove it away. And because I asked him, did they look at the mirror? Did they measure the distance between the seat, the steering wheel, and the side mirror? Well, though they drove it away, and I said, how could you let them just drive it away when that's all we had to go on? She could have been stuffed into a van, a trunk of a car. Someone could have driven that vehicle there. Oh, I can't think like that. I have to go on with my life. And also in the evening time, if that's when she headed up, which this was evening when she went missing, the winds are horrible up there. She's only 115 pounds. A note was left on there by hubby, by parents. Could that not have been a note that you'd leave when Larry and mom came to visit her and she was running off to the grocery store? It definitely doesn't sound like a note, and especially not one Kelly would leave. She was very verbal, you know, long-winded. It's not chatty. Like, if that's going to be a goodbye to your kids, I just don't see that. And so her rings were left in there. The vehicle was unlocked for 3 days. Really? Really? And then the jogger, a Japanese man that went to, the news reporter told me he went directly to the local police. He's got a report there that's easy to be found. He said the car was not there. I just went through. That car just disappeared there. I'm really concerned.
Kelly's disappearance came with some unique challenges from the start. She was a U.S. citizen overseas living on a military installation that fell under the U.S. military's law enforcement jurisprudence and investigating agencies. When we spoke with Kelly's mom, Janice, she shared what difficulties this posed.
There was one thing that I noticed when I was looking through my folders is OSI did not have the case for like 3 weeks or four, because I stayed a month. I didn't go until November the 11th is when I went over there. And so I stayed till like December the 11th, something like that. Well, I kept calling OSI and couldn't get the guy that I was supposed to talk to. Well, finally, like on a Thursday before I was leaving on Saturday, we got in touch with each other. And so I, up until that time, I had only spoke to security forces, who was the ones that were, quote unquote, handling the case. I don't feel like that there was a whole lot of investigative stuff going on. Although I had talked to security forces once, maybe twice on the phone. They had sent me a timeline, and I had asked them Vince's timeline, and they did not ever give me his timeline. I'd asked for the phone records and never got that.
Kelly's car was spotted on military surveillance cameras leaving the base in Okinawa on the evening of her disappearance. Unfortunately, the surveillance cameras did not show who was driving the car. This has been another frustration for Kelly's family in their search for answers.
All they really would say was that the cameras saw her car coming on base at like 8:40, 8:37, and they could tell it was her and the kids because she had come from church. But later, the 9:11 or 9:12 camera footage showed a vehicle that looked like her SUV. It was an outside lane, so they couldn't tell who was driving. That was what they said. And then later on, I wanted the footage, and I wanted more proof, and I wanted that investigated. And they just put me off. And then finally they said, well, we can't give you that, and you can't see that because it reruns every 30 days, and new information is recorded over it. To my knowledge, no outside person was able to see that. And certainly not the Japanese police, which they kept saying, you know, were the lead in the case. Well, because the car supposedly was found at Cape Zampa, which was in the Japanese district in their territory and not on the Air Force base. And, you know, I was looking through some more of the information that I have has come to light. One of it is the car wasn't there the 3 days that they kept telling me, that the security forces kept telling me. Time I got there, oh, the car was sitting there 3 days. That's why we didn't find her in the water. And, you know, and then after all those several years went by, you know, I found out there were witnesses, and one of them, that they knew this witness had come forward. One of them had called the Japanese police. They knew this person from the get-go. Had come forward and said her car was not there yesterday morning. I walk every day. And they had continued to tell me over and over that car sit there for 3 days, you know, so it didn't. And then the other witness that came forward and said the car was not up there at 11 o'clock at night on that Friday night. It was supposedly found the next morning at 4 a.m. So it didn't sit there for 3 days. So where was it for 3 days? Where was she for 3 days? And, you know, and then I found out that there was a fingerprint. I was told from the get-go there were no fingerprints. No, ma'am. There were no fingerprints, no footprints, no clothes, no nothing. She vanished, is what I was told.
Reporter Matt Burke told us more about this fingerprint that Janice mentioned.
There was a fingerprint found in the car, and apparently it's not her and it's not Vince. This is one thing that always bothered me. Obviously, I know, like, you could write a suicide note at your house and or wherever you are and go and commit suicide or whatever. But they never found a writing utensil. They found the suicide note in the car, and they never found a writing utensil. You know, the note, they couldn't tie the handwriting to her. So Yeah, there's a lot of unanswered questions.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. One of the most frustrating factors about Kelly's case are the jurisdictional issues. Since Kelly lived on the Air Force Base, they're tasked with investigating. But since her car was found at Cape Zampa, the Okinawa police have jurisdiction over that aspect of her case. Those who are looking for Kelly feel like the two agencies are pushing responsibility to the other one, and no one is really doing anything about it. To them, it feels like Kelly's case has fallen through the cracks. Janice feels that no law enforcement agency has done enough to find Kelly, even at the most basic level.
And so far, you know, we've not been able to get any of the FOIAs. Not too long ago, I checked with NAMIS, which, you know, is a National Missing Persons, you know, database. I fought and fought to get her put in that. Not too long ago, I contacted them and I said, who do y'all have as a law enforcement contact if any information comes forward? And they still had, at that point, one of the guys I had talked to on Okinawa. I think he was a lieutenant colonel. And I said, well, he's not even there anymore, because he'd sent me this horrendous letter about he was leaving. Da, da, da. Well, anyway, so then they got busy and they contacted Okinawa, et cetera, et cetera. And the end result was that the Air Force deleted their information, deleted their contact information, all of it, and just like wiped it off and pretended they had never been investigating her case. And now the only person on there is some guy out in Delaware who is on the cold case thing, but they've got that the Japanese police are the leading investigative agency. But no name, no phone number, because they don't want to be tied to this case. They probably deleted everything that was collected over all these years. And I mean, people say, oh, that couldn't happen. Well, I'm sorry to say, 3 or 4 years ago, the last FOIA that I sent to Okinawa, they told me that after 3 years, that information was destroyed. Well, I mean, if the right person started digging, there is still a possibility they could find something. But, you know, you've got these people that are backing the individual up, and I don't know that he did anything, and I don't. There were so many people that wrote me on the Facebook page. You know, people are still very supportive, and there's still a lot of them out there that agree with me and that I feel like that more should have been done.
Reporter Matt Burke has tried to push for answers, but has struggled to make any progress.
Nobody's been able to locate her or locate any kind of evidence in regard to, you know, her either committing suicide or whether foul play was involved or anything like that. And I think that's why the Air Force kind of like dropped it. You know, I think they would have pursued it probably if there was evidence or something, some leads, but it just kind of went cold, and that's where they are today. They basically told me that, you know, the case is cold, and I'm like, all right, well, we should be able to get some information on what you looked at, what you found, and they were just like, no. I mean, my guess would be that he would be the one that they would look at immediately, you know, but the thing is, you know, he's got an alibi in the hours after she drives off base. So whether or not, you know, this is why I was trying to get like phone records or stuff like that, because like, you know, I don't know if, you know, say the pastor leaves and maybe he goes out and meets her, or maybe she meets someone else, or, you know, you never know what happened after that. I know for a fact they told us that there's no way she left this island. So I think they found her passport when they searched her house. They said she either committed suicide or she was murdered.
So what happened to 27-year-old Kelly Cribbs Abad on October 26th, 2011? We know that she went to church that evening with her children, and her husband Vince was also there, but didn't leave at the same time as Kelly and the kids. Vince stayed behind to talk to the pastor. He wanted to discuss an argument that he had had with Kelly earlier that day. Kelly was seen arriving back on the base at 8:37 p.m., and it's believed that she put her kids to bed. And then at 9:11 p.m., her car was seen leaving the base, but the video wasn't clear enough to make out who was driving. It is around this time that Kelly's phone was powered down. When Vince arrived home around 10 p.m., Kelly was gone. Her vehicle was found 3 days later at Cape Zampa, with her belongings and a note that said, "Love my kids, love my hubby, and parents, bye." Some believe this was a suicide note. Others believed it was staged to appear that way. Did Kelly write the note that was left behind? Who was driving her car when it was seen leaving the base? Was it Kelly? And if so, why did she want to leave her family right before their transition to a new home? Would she have left her very young children alone in the home? Where was her car for the 3 days it was missing if multiple witnesses claim it wasn't at Cape Zampa? And what about that fingerprint that didn't match Kelly or Vince? Could that be an important link, or possibly someone who had just been in the car at some point? If Kelly didn't take her own life, who had a motive to want her to disappear? A lot of people point the finger at her husband, Vince. They take issue with the fact that he never really looked for his wife, and quickly moved on, and has since remarried a woman that he had been dating before he met Kelly. The problem is that Vince appears to have an airtight alibi. He was at church when it appears that Kelly went missing. Did someone act alone, or are there more people out there that know what happened to Kelly? At the time of her disappearance, Kelly was 27 years old. She had blonde hair and green eyes. She was approximately 5'7" tall and weighing around 110 pounds. If you have any information about the disappearance of Kelly Cribbs Abad, you're asked to text the Air Force's Office of Special Investigations at AFOSI to the number 274-637. You can also contact the Okinawa Base authorities at the Kadena Law Enforcement Desk at 098-961-2475. You can follow Kelly's story on social media at Kelly Cribbs Abad's Missing Person Support.
These kids, you know, they can't say a lot, but they do miss their mama, their real mama. You know, they ask me stuff, and I can't say a lot. And I'm sure this is not the only case, because I've talked to other women that have have lost children in some of the stuff that they've been through with their grandkids. It's just a hard situation. I try to do things to help the situation, not hurt it.
I was just a concerned Marine. I have four daughters of my own. Kelly's case is one of the things where I think about, you know, what if that happened to my daughter?
And that's part of the problem we're having. Every time we make a phone call, can we have Kelly's cell phone records? Can we have this? Can we have that? Well, we'll have to talk to Vince first. So no matter how many times he marries, he still will be my sister's next of kin. That is so wrong on so many levels. There should be one blood relative that represents that person when you know what I'm saying?
That brings us to the end of episode 196. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join the discussion, there's a page and a discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by filling out a short survey at Wondery.com/survey. Join me next time. I'll be covering a case from Nebraska. Thanks for listening.
On My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter Federal Agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.